ahead, lounge around in bed with a good magazine. We'll even read it to you. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Live. On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, happy 2016 to you. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis, John Greig, and Jeff Simmons with you this week. 2016 off to a nice little start. 2015 was a whole lot of fun. Coming up in the next couple of hours, we will talk about the Toronto Raptors. Second place in the Eastern Conference, Toronto Raptors. Despite the protest by Mr. John Greig. We'll save it, John. Just hold on. I know you hate on the Raptors.
I don't hate the Raptors.
You just want to talk about Jonathan Bernier and the Leafs for 2 hours. I get it. All right. We'll also talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs. And week 17 in the NFL as they get set for the postseason. But we start, gents, with the World Juniors. And we will have action on the go in about an hour as the Canadians taking on Finland in the quarterfinal game. Just wrapping up right now. Russia beats Denmark 4-3 in overtime.
Great game.
Yeah. The Danes took a couple of leads in this game. Russia tied it up late, under a minute to go. Ends up winning it in overtime, avoiding a massive, massive upset. But the Danes have shown flashes during this tournament. But Canada, I guess they've shown flashes as well. Very limited sample size of flashes, John. So they get through the round robin, beating Switzerland, beating Denmark, losing to Sweden, losing to the Americans, and really, really underwhelming people. Is there something you can put your finger on, or is this just not the best crop of juniors we sent over there?
It's not the best crop of juniors. It's a young team, which isn't the players' fault necessarily. They're the best of the bunch. They just happen to be a bunch of 18-year-olds rather than 19-year-olds. And the 19-year-olds on this team are not performing up to snuff. I mean, Jake Virtanen does not look like an NHL hockey player playing with boys. He just seems to be out of his element almost and doesn't know his role and hasn't really found a spot on this lineup. You know, to me, it's a team that is still in transition, four games in. I think their best game was against the U.S. They dominated Denmark. You got to throw that one out. Yeah. I mean, that's
had
just
like 60 shots on goal.
I mean, that's just, it's not a fair comparison.
Although Denmark beat Switzerland and they needed a shootout to beat Switzerland.
Yeah, and they had no answer for Switzerland's physical play through the first kind of 15, 20 minutes of that game. And, you know, to me, I've never seen a Canadian team out-muscled and outplayed physically like this one has been. I mean, there's been no elements of, you know, keep your head up, boys, we're playing Canada. That just hasn't had to happen yet. And I think it's an important part of being a Canadian team is you don't need guys running around headhunting, but you do need to be able to change momentum with physical play. You do need to come out strong and stop waving at pucks, but rather take the man. Even if that doesn't mean huge hits all the time, you got to punish people.
And they're not doing that much offensively either.
No.
And that's been their calling card for so long. I think they have less than 10 even strength goals. And you mentioned Virtanen, he has no points. They're changing the lines all the time. There's no consistency in terms of roles and in terms of what players are supposed to be doing. You mentioned the physical play. They don't look like a team right now.
Well, I think it's a problem probably when Mitch Marner is throwing your biggest hit of the game. Like,
and Joe Hicketts, right? Those are the two biggest hits. And Travis Konecny had a good one the other day, too.
Yeah.
And they've got some big physical guys on their team. They got Lawson Crouse.
Julian Gauthier is like 6'4", 210, and comes from a family of weightlifters and bodybuilders. And he hasn't, you know, he's been under the weather a little bit, and he's a draft-eligible age kid, so you don't expect too much of him. But you'd think he could still knock some guys around. And you haven't seen that from him or from Crouse or from Virtanen, for that matter. Not really, at least. Not the way that you would expect those guys to dominate physically.
comes from a family of weightlifters and bodybuilders.
He does, yeah.
It must be a heck of a Christmas break.
His grandfather was like Canadian bodybuilding champion and stuff. Yeah, no, there's a couple good stories on Sportsnet about that.
Hopefully they don't have Festivus in their house.
Yeah, feats of strength yeah, would exactly. never end. Oh, my goodness. All right, that being said, it's a round robin, right? It's part of the reason why I have a problem getting too worked up over this tournament, because this is not really the way hockey's designed to be played. Round robin and then one
game
eliminations.
This is the greatest hockey tournament in the world.
Right.
I'm serious. This is like appointment watching.
You are being serious.
I am being serious. This is...
Well, I mean, this is hockey. It's not better than the Olympic tournament.
It's more competitive. When you get to the final, when you get to the end of the Olympic tournament, you got the best hockey in the world. But... I mean, in my mind, there's six teams that could win this tournament almost every year now.
Yeah.
And
well, that's part of it as well, right? Like the pool is deeper.
Very much so. I mean, the world has caught up to Canada. There's no doubt about that. There's still, even, you know, the Denmarks of the world, they might not be putting together a deep team or a team as deep as Canada's, but they, you know, last year they had Nikolai Ehlers, and this year they've got Timo Meier again. Like, they've got top-notch talent, like top 10 draft pick talent, and... Everybody does now, which is why the Danes can give Canada a run. Well, I guess not the Danes in this case, but why the Swiss can give Canada a run, right? I mean, everybody is better.
So that being said, and people make jokes about, oh, we got to have the hockey summit now if this team flames out to the home Finns here in the quarterfinals. I don't know if that was ever going to be the case, but... How should we view this tournament if Canada does lose to Finland? They're one and done, Jeff.
I think John kind of said it. I think the world's kind of catching up to them. And that's not a bad thing. What has made the people critical of this tournament is Canada, you always just knew would come in and dominate.
Yeah. And it's not the case anymore.
No, and I think it's better for hockey fans, and I think it's better for just good hockey viewing.
And yeah, I agree. I mean, I think as much as it's nice to win 5 gold medals in a row,
yeah,
it's kind of boring. Like when you can walk in and you just are expecting it, and let's be frank. I mean, Canadians expect to win this tournament, right?
Sure.
And when they don't, there's like a huge, maybe there's a huge outcry. There's a hue and cry, right? And I mean, if they go out today, they'll be going out to a team that features some pretty good players, right? Like these Finns are outstanding. The two draft eligibles, Patrick Laine and Jesse Puljujärvi.
That was pretty good.
I think that's how you say it. Yeah.
Nice job.
Canada doesn't have that type of, I mean, it's got that talent. The Stroms and Marners of the world are that good too, but.
Are they like a year away almost, the Canadians?
Well, considering how many guys are on this team that are still eligible to return next year, then yeah, they could be a year away if.
But the catchphrase has always been, this is a 19-year-old's tournament. It's not the case this year, though, Joe.
It's not. It's true. I shouldn't say never. I can't remember the last time I watched this tournament and had seen it dominated by draft eligibles the way this one is. I believe it's 8 out of 10 of the top scorers are eligible for the 2016 NHL draft. Like, that is insane, you know? And Puljujärvi is putting together a tournament like no other draft eligible has ever had. He's highest points per game average so far. I believe it's Mario Lemieux and Wayne Gretzky are numbers 2 and 3 in that category.
Not so, bad company. I mean,
it's pretty insane what these guys are doing. And it is becoming less and less, I guess, of a 19-year-old tournament. I mean, it's a lot of those guys are in the NHL now. And they get there faster because they're better prepared and they're more trained. And so you're not seeing as many of them come in and dominate the rest of the world like we did in years past.
But all this being said and all this, the hand-wringing that surrounds the Canadian juniors, they could come out and beat the Finns,
yep,
right?
They could still win this tournament. And I don't think it would be, other than the fact that they'd be coming back from a fairly poor showing in the round robin, it would surprise nobody if Canada won this tournament. They are the deepest team. If they can figure out how to play with each other, then they could be quite the machine.
It's happened a lot in the past where Canada's looked terrible in the preliminary round and then caught fire at the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of having such a deep team, right? Where you don't really know what your role is when you come in unless it's specifically defined for you, because everybody could play anything. And you don't know who's on the top line or who's in the first PP unit, because there's potentially 15 guys who could be in that spot. And it takes some time for the for it to work itself out a little bit.
Perception is reality, but how different does this team look and how different does this tournament look for the Canadiens if they win that game on Boxing Day, if they get a couple more bounces, get a little better goaltending performance in that game against the Americans. If they win that game, sure, needing a shootout to beat Switzerland's not great, but you hammer the Danes and Sweden is probably the tournament favorite right now. I mean, we're having a totally different conversation if they win one extra game.
I think Sweden was the tournament favorite before it started. I mean, they had 14 returning players,
sure,
including a couple of guys who play in the AHL and are, you know, names that we know. If they beat the Americans in game one, they're playing the Czechs today instead of playing the Finns. And the Czechs and Finns put together what might have been the best game of the year on New Year's Eve. 5-4 win for the Finns, but it was back and forth and wide open. It was a great game of hockey.
So it's almost six of one, half dozen the other.
More
right?
or less, yeah. And I think Canada has the edge in goaltending. They probably have the edge on defense. I mean, they don't have the edge in terms of high-end scoring right now, but that who's to say that Dylan Strome or Mitch Marner couldn't go out and get 4 points? I mean, it's very possible. They're good hockey players as well.
What do we made of the play of Marner? Because he was, naturally, being a Maple Leafs top five pick, he's got the spotlight on him. He's picked up some points and some goals during this tournament, but Jeff, it's not like he's lighting the world on fire. What have you made of his tournament so far?
He's had some good offensive flashes. He's made some plays, but the consistency has been an issue. There's times where he looks flat out invisible and he looks overwhelmed, but it's not. You still see the signs of playmaking, and that's kind of what you're looking for at this level. Some people have given him some heat because he hasn't been dominant all the time, but yeah, he's got more to prove out there. I think these kind of games are exactly what you want to see. You want to see him step up in these semifinals and then these later round games because consistency has been a big issue for him this tournament.
Yeah, he looks like a rookie on the biggest stage he's ever played on.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's why they say this is a 19-year-old tournament, not an 18-year-old tournament. It's because you're looking for returning veterans and guys like that to lead the way. And unfortunately for Canada so far, at least, those guys, you know, haven't necessarily done what everybody was expecting. Lawson Crouse hasn't knocked anybody down that I can remember. Joe Higgins might be the best defenseman on the team, and he's played fairly well. I mean, he had that big gaffe against the U.S. where he, you know, he tipped the puck into his own net.
Don Cherry was looking derisively at that.
Didn't like yeah.
It. You knew it was coming, too.
Yeah.
yeah. But, yeah, and we've already mentioned Virtanen, who hasn't been great. The coaching staff is leaning on young guys, relatively speaking, to lead this team, and so far just hasn't come together like they were hoping.
And Dave Lowry, the coach, keeps changing Marner's line mates.
Right, he played with Strome for a little bit. And
it's pretty hard for a young guy in a new tournament to find any consistency when you're switching lines all the time.
Yeah, I think that's part of the problem. We've kind of touched on it, is that nobody knows exactly where they slot into the lineup yet. And we'll find out this afternoon or this morning if they've figured it out. And, you know, they better, right? I mean, it's needless to say, they better figure it out quick.
Yeah, yeah, they have 60 minutes to. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, John Gregg, and Jeff Simmons. So mentioned that the Swedes look pretty good, and they are the tournament favorites headed into the knockout round. A couple of Nylanders, although one of them has only played a portion of a game, and William takes that big hit on Boxing Day. He has yet to return to action, and there was some weirdness as far as whether he was going to speak to the media or not, and it was canceled the last minute. Maybe Lou Lamoriello with a say in how much he's allowed to say, which is nothing. He was not allowed to speak, which I guess it makes sense, John, when you got a guy who might be concussed. Probably not the greatest idea to send him out there in front of a microphone.
I just think he's a 19-year-old kid. He doesn't need to go out there and try and play doctor and explain what's wrong with him. I mean, that's what the doctors and the coaching staff and the executive staff of Team Sweden are for. I mean, it was interesting that they called a news conference and said he would be there and then canceled the news conference and said he wouldn't be there. It was intriguing in that way, but if it was me, I would never have allowed a 19-year-old kid to go out and talk like that anyway.
Right.
I mean, this isn't the NHL, not yet. And these guys don't have to go out and speak for themselves like that.
Okay, so William, and he's not playing in today's game against Slovakia. They don't need him because they're leading 3-0 in the second period. Brother Alex is maybe somebody people weren't aware of, although he plays in Mississauga.
Yep.
I mean, you got a chance to watch him lots.
Yep.
But people generally don't go to Mississauga to watch hockey games. So he's got 7 points in his 4 games this season, a draft eligible guy. How much has he raised his stock during this tournament?
I would think it's hard to raise it much more than it already was, but I mean, this is the biggest stage and he's played really well. I think the two Finns have kind of cemented themselves as, I mean, Puljujarvi might, in some people's minds, is now battling Auston Matthews for number one overall.
Really, though? Hasn't the narrative already been set, the Matthews narrative?
I think so. I think also he plays center, which is obviously the more coveted position. But, you know, and he's one of the better players in the Swiss League, which probably isn't quite up to... it's right there with the SM Liga, I guess, the Finnish League, which is where Puljujärvi plays. So, yeah, I think, you know, right now there's a discussion about that. I don't think it's going to come to much, but I think there's your number two pick, and then his teammate Patrick Laine might be the number three pick. And then, you know, I think Nylander's a top 10 guy, but there's probably Matthew Tkachuk of the U.S. and London Knights goes in the top five, and Jacob Chychrun has to fit in there somewhere as the best defenseman. So right there, you're already thinking like, Nylander's around a six.
I was going to say six is probably the high spot.
Yeah, and that's, you know, where we had him in our Sportsnet rankings earlier in December as well. So, but he's moving up, and he's playing well, and he's surprising, I think, a lot of people.
If the Maple Leafs tumble a little bit here, by which I mean win too many games down the stretch, I mean, is that an interesting situation, Jeff, to have the Nylander brothers both in your system?
It would be fun.
It would. It'd like be interesting.
It's like the Hanson brothers.
Right. They look a
just
lot like
the
Hanson brothers.
Yes.
Very similar.
Except they're talented.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow, shots fired. Take that, Hanson brothers.
Yeah.
Not the other Hanson brothers. Not the hockey Hanson brothers. The other ones.
Yeah.
With the same hair as the Nylanders.
Yeah. It's not like you're reaching just to get the brothers on the same team. This guy is a top 10 player. He's playing on the top line for this really talented Sweden team. If you can get him and there's... no one on the board who fits your need. Yeah, how much fun would that be to have the two Nylanders on the top line?
Which NHL team is having the best World Juniors? Because it's hard in this city to get away from having a look at the Maple Leafs prospects. And Dmytro Timoshov having a pretty good tournament as well for Team Sweden. And he's a guy who's like found money if the Maple Leafs have hit on anything there, because I believe he's a fifth round pick. Who, John, is having the best tournament? Who's happiest with what's gone on, and who is most excited about the future watching this tournament so far?
It's interesting because it goes back to the fact that this is a tournament that so far is being dominated by NHL draft eligible players rather than drafted players.
Yeah.
I mean, Arizona's got 7 guys in this tournament. They've got to be pretty happy with the future of their team right now, but considering the young guys that they have in the lineup already in the NHL. I think the Leafs should be happy with Dmytro Timoshov. I mean, he's been lighting up the QMJHL all year, and you're right, he was a fifth-round pick, and it was kind of, you know, an under-the-radar type of prospect, but I think Leafs fans now realize that this kid, you know, he's undersized, but he's pretty electric.
The Maple Leafs don't draft anybody that is normal-sized anymore, right? Like, if you're not undersized, you're not even on their radar, seemingly.
Well,
Jeremy Bracco's, like, a foot tall. Timoshov is small. I don't know. Nylander's got a little size, but Mitch Marner's slight. Like, that's all they do.
Yeah, I mean, they're drafting for skill.
Yeah,
and
no, I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying.
And when once you get out of kind of the top five-ish, right, then you got to start taking flyers a little bit. I mean, obviously the flyers become bigger and bigger the further down the draft board you go. But you know, there are kind of slam dunks, and then after that, it's kind of a crapshoot. You never really know what you're going to get outside of the top 10. You would expect to get an NHL hockey player, but you don't know if he's going to be a first liner or a third liner. You just don't know how these kids will develop. So,
well, when they get Auston Matthews this year, then that'll help their size.
Come on, Jeff. We all know the Oilers are getting Auston Matthews.
Well, most of these guys in the top five are pretty, there's not any of these tiny Mitch Marner types, it looks like. Lane and Tkachuk, they're all pretty big guys.
They are big guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about getting a 5'8" guy for drafting the top five this year.
Well, I'm not saying
at all.
I'm not knocking the Maple Leafs drafting
strategy.
No,
I'm not saying you are. Yeah, that's
it
just
sounds
where
like
it
you
fell.
Are.
Yeah, I know it does. And even Jeremy Bracco might be something. But yeah, they have guys that are small that can score. It's nice to mix that up with some size.
Yeah, if you hit a home run with one of those guys, you know, like you can't have a team full of small guys in the NHL. I mean, and even Marner's not that small anymore. I mean, he's not 6 feet, but he's starting to fill out. I mean, he still needs to fill out more, and he will. You know, he doesn't have to shave yet, but he will soon, yeah. Right? If you hit a home run with one of those guys, maybe two, and you can spread them around your lineup, you're in pretty good shape.
Before we move on, one more note on Team Canada, because Mackenzie Blackwood missed the first two games of this tournament with his suspension, returned for two games, and wasn't great. I mean, didn't blow the doors off. The Canadian team seemingly does not have a superstar goalie, and he will get the start in the elimination round in the quarterfinals against Finland. How confident should we be in Mackenzie Blackwood in net? Because as mentioned, there's no Carey Price here for this Team Canada, and maybe we're looking at some different results if they had a little better goaltending.
I think Mackenzie Blackwood is one of the best junior age goaltenders in the world, period. He's been carrying the Barry Colts all year long in the Ontario Hockey League.
Carrying a weapon as well that he uses on an occasional player.
Yeah, he did lose his mind that one game. But, I have more confidence in him than I do in the Finnish goaltending. It's not – the problems with Team Canada this year have not been in net. Yes, you're right. There hasn't been that kind of game-saving, outstanding – you know, flying across the crease, making highlight reel saves, goaltending performance. But they've been pretty steady, if, you know, unspectacular for sure, but pretty steady. It's not Mackenzie's Blackwood's fault that he could only score two goals against Switzerland in regulation and overtime.
Yeah.
That's not his fault.
And it wasn't his fault that they took a million penalties in front of him in the Sweden game.
Yeah, no, I mean, exactly. I really don't think goaltending has been the main issue. The main issue has been too much perimeter play from forwards who seem to be really enamored with the wider ice surface.
Yeah.
Rather than taking the puck to the net like you've seen in the past. It's been a defense that can't make really enough outlet passes and breakout passes to get those forwards moving with speed through the neutral zone. And it's been a power play that I believe has been utilizing the points too much when, again, the main weapon on your team is depth at forward and a lot of skill at forward. And you've seen them. They've been the most dangerous when those guys take the puck into the scoring areas rather than play with it on the boards and pass it around at the points. And unless those things change, they're going to lose today. So we'll see.
So with that... we get you set for the Canadians and Finland.
All right, so I don't mean to be too much of a downer because, as we've said, they could go out and blow the doors off Finland today.
All right,
and
how about a prediction then? It's hard to predict this team,
but it is hard to predict. Okay, so I take Canada to beat Finland 4-2 today.
Good Canadian kid, John Grigg.
I think that they can go out and shut down the young kids who are lighting up this tournament so far because I think that they're going to make a point of it.
A lot of pressure on the home nation as well.
Yep, that's for sure. For sure, but it will be an insane... arena, like those 12,000 fans are going to be going crazy, and yeah.
I'm going to take Finland.
There you go.
All right.
I just have no confidence in this team right now, and Finland's got that great top line, and just the way the defense you mentioned, the defense isn't moving the puck up to the forwards, and they're not breaking out right, and there's no cohesion. They look like a collection of individuals, and that's just not a good way to win this tournament.
Your citizenship will be revoked. But yeah, I kind of like Finland as well.
Yeah,
especially the way the Canadians have played. I mean,
they're sexier team for sure. It's just
about Finland. You think sexy,
but you can't not be excited about watching those two kids, right? Yeah. And it's just awesome to see, you know, 18-year-olds, 17-year-olds performing at that high level. And it would be a nice story to see Finland win on home ice as well, like win the whole deal, you know. It would just suck if it had to come at the expense of Canada in the quarterfinal.
We will see coming up at 11 o'clock, Canada and Finland in the quarterfinals of the World Juniors. When we return, Raptors second place in the Eastern Conference, but John Grigg is not enamored with them. Come on, man.
It's not true.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not true.
All right, well, you'll get your say coming up in a second. All right. We'll talk a little Raptors basketball and what they should do with DeMar DeRozan this offseason, because the guy has been one of the best players in the NBA in the month of December. That's coming up next. Plenty more as well. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Grigg and Jeff Simmons. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Sportsnet 590. 590. The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, Jeff Simmons, John Grigg with you. The Toronto Raptors are having a good season. My goodness, they're second in the Eastern Conference, 21-13. They are, let's see, fifth in the entire NBA at 21-13, tied with the Atlanta Hawks, but I guess they own the tiebreaker. Same with the Clippers are also 21-13. But... They've beaten the Hawks. They've beaten the Clippers. They've beaten the Thunder. They've beaten the Cavaliers. They've beaten the Spurs. And they almost beat the Warriors twice. So, they are quite good, although they've got some smelly, stinky losses this year as well. But John Grigg will not give them their due. He hates them so much. They make him sick. Why do you hate the Raptors?
Listen, I don't hate the Raptors, Ben. I think that the Raptors are a hardworking team, and... they're led well by their coach. They've got a new cult hero in Bismack Biyombo, and they've got some pretty good talent on that team. And they're obviously, they're 21-13, like you say, and number two in the East. The problem with the Toronto Raptors for me, and maybe it's more of an NBA problem than a Raptors problem, is that I don't see them winning a title, doing anything, getting to the NBA finals even. They're just, they've got good players, but they don't have superstars, at least not entrenched superstars. And without those guys on your team, you can't win in the NBA, period.
Well, my counter would be that maybe we're starting to see DeMar DeRozan, the superstar, because he's averaged more than 25 points a game in December. He's likely going to be the NBA player of the month for that month. There's only LeBron James has averaged more points per game in the month of December than DeMar DeRozan. They've got, right now, the best point guard in the Eastern Conference, Kyle Lowry. Has played like the best point guard. Now Kyrie Irving probably is the best point guard in the Eastern Conference. He hasn't been healthy. Kyle Lowry is playing at an incredibly high level.
Amongst healthy players, Kyle Lowry is the best at his position in the Eastern Conference.
He's the second best player.
Yeah, no, he's pretty good. Like, he's good. I like him. Right?
What do you want? Okay, so there's three teams, probably four, that we can say can win it all, right? The Cavaliers, the Warriors, the Spurs, and the Thunder. And
sure.
You'd be surprised if anybody outside of those four, one at all. So what are you supposed to do? You just throw your hands up in the air?
No, I don't know what you do. I mean, that's the problem with the NBA, is that if you don't have two superstars, you don't win NBA titles. And the Raptors do not have two superstars. They have two players who, by all accounts...
two all-stars?
Yep.
Two what should be starting all-stars in the Eastern Conference this year.
But they're not superstars.
Well, but maybe DeMar DeRozan is turning into a superstar.
But he's not turning into LeBron James.
No.
Like, give me a break, right? He's not turning into Kevin Durant. He's not.
But he might be James Harden. He might be better than James Harden.
How many titles have the Houston Rockets won recently?
None.
Well, there's got to be some sort of baby steps here. This is a franchise that's never won a seven-game series.
Like, how about win a series?
So maybe, yeah, we can't just expect them to win the title.
No, I don't expect them to win the title at all.
But what if this year...
ever.
No, but what if this year they get to an Eastern Conference final, which is not out of the realm of possibility, right? Like I said, they're second in the Eastern Conference. And say they win a game or two against the Cleveland Cavaliers, and then they have a good offseason. No, and then they have a good offseason, and they re-sign DeMar DeRozan, and they have a good draft. They get that maybe top 10 pick from the Nuggets, Knicks, whoever is the least favorable. They get that pick. Then are we talking about, hey, boy, you know what? Maybe they can... when maybe they can go a little deeper against the Cavaliers. Maybe they can come out of the Eastern Conference. And then you're in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, but then, okay, so what you're hoping for is that with somebody else's draft pick, you can find a gem and draft that guy, and he becomes your superstar, right? That's what you're hoping for, because otherwise you're the Atlanta Hawks. You've got a bunch of pretty good players, and we can put a nice team together, but we can't win anything outside of 50 games in the regular season.
Unless you think that the backcourt of Kyle Lowry, who, you know, the renewed dedication to fitness and having a career year, hitting threes at a great pace and doing all the great things that Kyle Lowry does, and DeMar DeRozan finally hitting his stride and being one of the elite two guards in the NBA. I don't know, maybe that seems, and then you've got one of the better free agent pickups this offseason.
Four of them.
Yeah, and Damari Carroll and Bismack Biyombo, and you start getting a little bench contribution from Terrence Ross and Patrick Patterson. There's a lot worse situations in the NBA than what the Toronto Raptors have, Jeff.
And that's the thing. And when you look at the sports teams in the city, take away that one Blue Jays run.
Right.
Why not embrace this team?
I don't know. Greg doesn't like things.
John has a fair point that their ceiling is capped.
Thank you.
And I totally get that. I think in a sense that's why you see a lack of buzz in the city. But at the same time, this is a fun team. This is a likable team. They're well-built. They're sustainable. They have a lot. There's depth to them. You gotta enjoy that part of it. But if you're right, the key to this team really taking that step is DeMar DeRozan, because they don't really have a guy out on that roster with superstar potential.
DeMar DeRozan gets to the rim. I mean, the skill set that he has, sure, he occasionally takes the occasional bad shot, although he hasn't been doing a lot of that recently. He'll take his, 20-foot fadeaways with a hand in his face, but he'll also get to the rim. We've seen superstars in this city, certainly at the end of their tenures here. How often do we want Vince Carter to drive the bucket because of his athleticism, and he refused to do so? DeMar DeRozan, seemingly at every opportunity, tries to get to the rim, tries to get to the free throw line, and is successful at it because he has now a reputation around the league as a guy who has that ability, who can get to the line. He gets calls, double-digit free throws every game.
I'll admit, I was not sold on DeRozan, and he's proving me wrong.
Right, me neither. I was a guy that thought, oh, boy, if you're tying up so much of your franchise in DeMar DeRozan, you're probably in trouble. But the guy has been a machine here in December.
So he's a max player then? He's worth $25 million or whatever, $150 over 6 years?
In this NBA, probably.
Yeah. And especially if he continues to do what he's done in December. Like, if he continues that to the end of the season, I have less of a problem giving him that type of money. And it all, to me, all right, so John,
if DeMar DeRozan averages 25 points a game for the rest of the season, he will not be a Toronto Raptor because he's going to opt out and sign with the Knicks or the Lakers or whichever other big team he wants to go to. Because
the NBA spurn you.
Yeah, you're really making Raptor fans happy.
I know. I hate to be the big downer.
No, you don't.
I mean, I enjoy the debate, but I hate to always be the downer. But I mean, Toronto is a big market in North America, but it's a smallish market in the NBA. And we've seen
smallish. I don't know. Is it smallish market?
It's not a small market, but it's not on, even though it's the sixth largest TV market in North America, there are more than five places that players in the NBA would want to go to than Toronto.
Yeah.
Although
there's Andrew Wiggins probably, if he had his druthers.
Listen, this is like a pipe dream, this Wiggins thing. He's going to go to wherever gives him the most money and whichever big U.S. market he wants to play in. Now, hopefully, Steven Stamkos is coming to Toronto, Andrew Wiggins will want to come home and lead his team to a title, right? Lead his city to a title. But that is far from a guarantee. And
Corey Joseph wanted to come here. Now he's not a superstar.
Well, that's a little different.
But he's been a great addition.
I don't knock Corey Joseph.
There wasn't a big market for Corey Joseph.
I think the Spurs definitely wanted to bring him back, but they couldn't with the LaMarcus Aldridge signing. And he's proven to be a spectacular addition.
Yeah. As both of you guys have said, it's a nice, hardworking team that has shown some depth in the offseason acquisitions of Scola and Joseph and Damari Carroll, Bismack Biyombo. They have worked out. The problem is that you're not acquiring guys you need to win a title.
Why can't we just enjoy, the run that they're on?
What run? They're 21-13.
Yeah, that's
a nice run. They haven't even played half a season.
Right, that's a nice run.
You're already calling them the best team in the East. And
no,
best
team.
This city should be over the moon for the Toronto Raptors. And it's I like them. I'm glad that they're playing well, but they're not going to win a title. They might not even get to an Eastern Conference final.
So what do you do?
I don't know. Cheer for another sport?
That's what it sounds like you want to do.
Honestly, the Toronto Maple Leafs, right? The team, everybody hates to watch a Toronto Maple Leafs this year.
Yeah.
But at least you know that, like, there is a chance that they might get a superstar. There is also a chance they might draft a superstar. And there's, like, hope for something better for the first time in a long time. Now, I would rather watch a Toronto Raptors game than a Toronto Maple Leafs game any day of the week. But at least there's something in the back of your mind. It's like the Leafs could be good one day. They might actually have a chance.
Who would have figured the Warriors would be where they're at, though, a couple of years ago, right? And sure, they got lucky in the draft. And yeah, they were pretty lousy for a while there. And the Raptors are not, they're not going to tank, right? It's not like they're getting ready to line up to be one of those lottery teams. But who knows what happens in the offseason? And I mean, Kevin Durant is the big domino to fall. Is it totally out of the realm of possibility that the Raptors can make a play for Kevin Durant in the offseason, Jeff?
It'd be your deciding between Durant and DeRozan, right?
I guess. Well, that's in my mind, there's only one scenario where you're not offering DeRozan the max now, right?
That
is Kevin Durant. And if Kevin Durant wants to come to Toronto, if you're DeMar DeRozan, are you not considering, hey, maybe like a shorter-term deal to get a run with Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, and Kevin Durant? That could be interesting. But it's unpredictable to talk about this team. Sure. In 2016, the Toronto Raptors have no chance to win an NBA title and no chance to make an NBA Finals. It would be an incredible accomplishment to make an Eastern Conference Final. But we're talking about a team that hasn't won a first-round series in 100 years. I mean, that would be a nice first step, and then who knows what happens in the offseason.
Yeah, I think Griggs' problem is an NBA problem. It's not a Raptors problem.
Yeah. He hates the NBA.
And you know what? He has a point.
Oh, I like the NBA. It's an entertaining product to watch. But you can't win in the NBA without two superstars. And if your players get too good and you're a Toronto Raptor, that guy's walking.
Well, the Raptors have two players that are like right below superstar status, right? Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan are almost there. And maybe we're seeing the steps towards superstardom for DeMar DeRozan.
We have to see it in the postseason. Because last year, they looked like guys who have played in the All-Star game, they didn't look like All-Stars in the playoffs against Washington.
No, they looked horrible.
Yeah, and that's when we're going to really learn
about. That was a different team, though, last year.
This team's deeper. They can play defense. They're much more sustainable over the course of the year. But I think that's why you kind of see a lot of people not embracing the team. It's one of these things where you've become jaded, and you're like, well, we got to wait until the playoffs.
Right.
But what's the alternative? You mentioned the Leafs. Yeah, they could be better. But right now, they're unwatchable. They're boring. They've been terrible for 10 years. We got a team who's second place in a conference.
Right.
And we're still critical of them. That sums up this city perfectly.
Yeah, we're fickle.
Yeah.
No thanks to you, John.
Guys, we're 34 games in.
Yeah.
You know?
So
if they've gone 21-13, it's one injury away from going 13-21 in the next 34, right?
Well, they've also played an incredible amount of road games, 18 road games, most in the Eastern Conference. They got a bunch of home games coming up. They've played some real tough games against the Western Conference. They should be able to beef up on their second half schedule, and they're healthy, right? Like they've gone through a long portion of this season without full health, losing Jonas Valanciunas for 7 games and Damari Carroll with the knee injury. And by and large, Terrence Ross has been horrible and Patrick Patterson's been rancid, and they're second in the Eastern Conference at 21-13. Like maybe there's real, real good things to come for them in the second half of the season, if I'm going to take the anti-John Grigg point of view.
There is hope. I mean,
there is hope. Oh, there is hope.
Yeah,
okay,
sure. I mean, they might finish second in the conference. They could win the conference. But can anybody actually see them beating LeBron and the Cavs? Come on, guys. Seriously. And if they can't do that, then all you're cheering for is like, let's win a series.
You're like Ricky Bobby, man. If you're not first, you're last. Like, it's an accomplishment to make the Eastern Conference Final. Like, my goodness.
I guess,
there's only one winner, right?
Yeah, you can be second. You can be third.
So, yeah.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
You can.
Great.
Ricky Bobby was an idiot. No, don't be Ricky Bobby.
Great. You can make the Eastern Conference Final, lose to the Cavs, watch the Cavs win or lose to San Antonio or Golden State.
Yeah.
And take solace in the fact that you might have been the fourth or fifth best team in the league this year.
And then maybe you continue to improve your team in the offseason. You take that next step towards being the best team in the Eastern Conference and competing against LeBron James. Because, you know, LeBron James doesn't win the title the NBA title every single year. In fact, there's a bunch of years he doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But right? He hasn't. But he. Sure. But you don't have a LeBron James on your team, and you need one of those guys to win the NBA title. And that's the problem. You don't. You can't tell me that DeMar DeRozan is like LeBron James.
He's not.
Right? And you can't tell me he's going to be like LeBron James.
But if you have a budding superstar, like, and he's, even if he is a star or superstar, I mean, I feel like we're having the NFL elite debate here, but if you have two all-stars, Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Damari Carroll, like, say you get some really, really spectacular performances, and then you add another piece in the offseason, I don't know. I don't think it's entirely out of the realm of possibility.
It's, you could be the Golden State Warriors, right? Who, like, they won last year with one superstar and, like, five other really, really good players.
Yeah.
Right? But look at the list of teams that have won. San Antonio, superstars. San Antonio, superstars. Oklahoma City, superstars.
Yeah.
The Mavs, the Lakers, the Spurs again, the Mavs, the Spurs again. Like, there's a pattern here, and it involves having at least two elite players on your team to win in this league.
Either way, the Raptors have been a fun team to watch by and large this season. despite what you heard for the last 15 minutes, they're enjoyable and life is good.
And okay? I will cheer for them. I will cheer for them, and I hope for the best.
You should be a Sixers fan.
Yeah.
No, like that's yeah.
There's more hope for the Sixers, right? Hey, they could have Ben Simmons. Oh, then there's their superstar, right, John?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, they're gonna hit pay dirt at some point. They can't.
You would think.
You can't
they
not
haven't yet.
They haven't yet.
The
this
Pelicans have a superstar. They're 10-22.
Yeah.
They need
that's
two superstars.
Where that's
oh,
right. Yeah. Okay.
Maybe three.
We'll revisit this on future shows when we return. Maple Leafs are playing hockey, I suppose. Sometimes well, actually, generally pretty well. And actually played a pretty entertaining game against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Jonathan Bernier keeps getting lucky with everybody in front of him getting hurt. And you know what? 2016-2017 does look interesting for the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll talk about them and how terrible the Pacific Division and the Western Conference is in the NHL. Coming up next, Ben Ennis, John Gregg, Jeff Simmons, and Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
If it's a sports story you're talking about, you can guarantee they'll be talking about it. Unless it's something like arena football. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, alongside Jeff Simmons and John Gregg. Maple Leafs have done everything right, really, this season. You look at it. I mean, I think the goal at the outset of the season was, hey, lose as many games as possible, get yourself in position to maybe draft Austin Matthews, and if not Austin Matthews, then somebody in the top five, but compete every single night and flip a bunch of one-year deals at the deadline. Well, except for that last part, yeah, we'll see if that's even possible in this era of the NHL. Everything else has gone according to plan, Jeff. They have been really well coached, it seems. They've lost their fair share of games, but competed in every single game. Maybe they're winning too many, actually.
Yeah, Mike Babcock might be a better coach than I even thought.
Yeah.
Because this team was totally unwatchable last year. They brought in some new players, and they've gotten rid of some guys, but they're kind of a fun team for the limited talent they have. They play hard every night, and they've won six of the last 10 games even, which might be too much. But
yeah,
it's kind of gone stale at this point of the year. Outside of Leo Komarov, there's not much going on with this team, and you almost want them to start trading guys.
Yeah, so we won't talk about them too much, by which I mean like 3 minutes here. But Jonathan Bernier is now the goaltender du jour, and not by choice. By the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's a necessity here because James Reimer came back, mopped up in a third period for Bernier and hurt himself again. Seems like Reimer really has a tough time staying on the ice. We know Garrett Sparks is the long-term injury. So because of necessity, Jonathan Bernier getting another kick of the can, John, and I guess in his most recent performance, a pretty good one, 39 saves against the Penguins, and I guess he's got a shot here to turn his season around. If he does have a great second half, maybe there's some salvaging of things for him.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you got to do is have a great second half. I mean, I think you want both these guys to be better than average goalies, which, you know, I guess Reimer has shown that this year.
But is there any way that he ups his stock enough to be trade bait, or is it a situation where you're not paying Jonathan Bernier $4 million plus next season anywhere? Like,
yeah,
I think no matter what
if he goes on a run, I think you might be able to get like a third round pick for him or something like that. And I mean, I think you would do that in a second because you don't want to have to pay ostensibly your backup goalie $4 million. And I just think that I think he needs to get out of the fishbowl that is the Toronto hockey market and just be able to relax a little bit because, I mean, it's just, it couldn't go any worse for a guy under the microscope every single day, and it might be good for him to be somewhere else.
Maple Leafs don't have a great history of success picking up those, you know, highly touted backup goalies, Vesa Toskala and now Jonathan Bernier. And
let's not forget that Bernier was, like, everybody wanted Bernier.
Sure.
Right?
Everybody wanted Vesa Toskala.
Yeah. But, I mean, maybe that just goes to show you that, you know, when you're playing for, like, a team like the LA Kings who,
everybody
you know,
wanted
own
Cam
the possession
Talbot.
Game and can, you know, you're mopping up games and you're playing against the league's worst and you're playing behind a really good team.
Sure.
That, you know, maybe you're better, you're not as good as everyone thinks, right?
All right, enough Leaf talk.
Great.
For a second. Yeah. Right. Good job, everybody. Got through it. So I mentioned it. Okay, we assume these one-year contracts are going to be flipped here at the deadline. But boy, has the trade market been stale in the NHL here, John. I don't know what you do about it. And sure, it makes sense, right? It's so hard to fit contracts under the salary cap for a lot of teams in the NHL. It's just so constricting with so many teams up near the cap to fit money in, money out. I just don't know if there's a solution, and it takes a lot of the fun out of watching teams during the regular season, does it not?
Yeah, it does. It kind of sucks to be like an NHL hockey fan and know that there's no scuttlebutt about who could go where and what could happen. And it's the same when nobody gets to free agency anymore and there's no more trades. It's also because the standings are so bunched up, right? I mean,
yeah, everybody's in it still.
When some games are worth 3 points and some games are only worth 2 points, you're going to end up with, you know, teams like the Edmonton Oilers being like a really crappy team, but only being a few points out of a playoff spot because they play in a really crappy division. And
it's not like the NHL is about to change that because they love that.
Yeah. And I can see why they want competition right down to the end, you know, of course. But I mean, you need some intrigue during the season, you know, like, and you just don't have it anymore. And I think it's a shame. I mean, part of like when in the dog days of winter, you know, part of what keeps a league like the NHL going and keeps interest going is the idea of like who could go where and maybe there's a trade and like, wow, isn't that great? And, you know, maybe my team can pick up this player who's on the block, but there's just nobody on the block anymore. Not really, at least. I mean, you can't even get the Islanders to trade a friggin' defenseman, right? Like, come on.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And baseball does such a good job at that in comparison. And there's just, yeah, you're right. There's no player movement anymore. No one.
Oh, no. Wait. Ben Scrivens got moved.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
He's been moved like 5 times in the last 2 years. You look at the list of free agents, and this year is actually not bad, even beyond Stamkos. But you look next year, and when was the last time a good player, sustainably good player, changed teams?
Well, it's going to be Steven Stamkos. We all assume. I assume we all assume.
But outside of him, who was the last one?
Yeah, it's
like guys like Brad Richards are like these prize free agents.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're all old guys, right? I mean, that's the problem is you're not getting the 25 to 27-year-old good players. Even then, I mean, he's traded.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're not moving in free agency. And it really makes for like a stale kind of storyline surrounding much of the league.
It's been a stale year. I hate to sound like Greg was for the NBA, but like, McDavid's hurt.
Yeah.
Price is hurt. Crosby stinks this year. Who's worth watching right now?
Dallas.
Dallas Stars are fun,
okay.
For sure.
I'll give you that.
Washington. Dallas and Washington are fun teams to watch. They both score a bunch of goals. The Capitals off to really an historic start to their season. incredible record-setting number of wins through their first 36 games. And the Dallas Stars, with what they can do offensively in the almost the dead puck era, and we're going to have changes to the rules, we all think. I assume we all think that as well. 2016, 2017, something's going to happen, whether it's a bigger net or whatever, smaller goalie
Please
pads.
Please, God, do not make it a bigger net.
Well,
like,
I don't know.
We don't need
do
bigger
nets.
Do we
want to have this discussion right now?
Well, we make some goalie equipment a little bit smaller. There's still tons of scoring chances
that.
In the
NHL. I feel like we've had that conversation 100 times and nothing tangible has been achieved.
They're still wearing like gigantic shoulder pads and huge gloves and massive blockers. And
right.
It's like in today's day and age, you don't need pads that big to be protected. There is plastics and whatnot, things that I don't even know about probably, that can keep you protected enough. If defensemen and forwards can go out and block 100-mile-an-hour slap shots wearing shin pads and skate guards, why do goalies need this massive gear?
I liked hockey in the early 90s, too. It was more fun.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's crazy.
It's better hockey now. The quality of play and the average player is much better than it was then, which is partly why you don't see as many goals scored. Even the goalies are athletes. They're big. They're strong. They're not like the guys who couldn't skate, so therefore they ended up in net. But the game itself is faster, more skilled with bigger guys. So it's a great game with lots of scoring chances, but I think you can tweak the goalie equipment just a little bit. I mean, come on, guys. Seriously? Like, bigger nets? Really?
Well, it does. It's sad when a team like the Dallas Stars does stand out the way they do. And, yeah, they have elite scorers in Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, but I mean, how many teams score like they do? And is that a sustainable way to win come playoff time? Can the Dallas Stars win a Stanley Cup, Jeff?
My first instinct is no.
Right.
Based on everything, they're not that deep of a team. They don't have a great defense. They don't have a sustainable number one goalie. They switch
all
the time.
But they're 28-8-3.
I know, but there's a lot of teams that dominate the regular season, but in the playoffs you got to win 2-1 games, and you got to go through St. Louis and Chicago and LA. As good as they are scoring, I don't know if that's sustainable through the grind of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
I really hope it is. I would really like to see a team that isn't a defensive juggernaut win the Stanley Cup, because it's a copycat league.
Yes.
And I would love to see more teams try and play this kind of game. And it makes for a more fun product, but it also makes more teams more competitive, I think, because if you can find one or two guys like Seguin and Ben, then you can build a style of play around them that is exciting.
I just worry about them in a 7-game series.
Yeah, I do too, Jeff.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong. I don't think that they're going to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
I just really hope that they do.
So we want Dallas, Washington.
That would be outstanding.
Yeah.
Yes.
Dallas,
that would be outstanding.
Sign me up.
Dallas just hopes they don't meet the Toronto Maple Leafs in the Stanley Cup Final, which is unlikely, but the Leafs have beaten them twice this season. They've actually had their troubles against lousy teams this year. They can't beat the lousy teams, beat good teams, but not the bad ones. Let's stay in the Western Conference. The Pacific Division is, I was going to say weird, but let's just say terrible. It's terrible. Outside of the Kings, it's terrible. Arizona's second with their 39 points. Vancouver's not a good team. Somebody's going to have to make the playoffs here. Two of Arizona, Vancouver, San Jose, Anaheim, Calgary, Edmonton. And yes, Edmonton, despite being dead last in the Western Conference, just 6 points out of third in the Pacific Division. It's funny.
And McDavid's coming back.
Right, he's coming back. But yeah, it is funny to talk about the Oilers being dead last again. I mean, if they win Austin Matthews, come on. I mean, we got to have an intrigue, an inquiry.
I wonder what they would do if they got the top pick again.
Nothing. I mean, if they didn't do anything after they won McDavid, nothing. Like, it's...
No, but I mean, would they keep it?
Oh, I see.
Or would they just put it out there for the highest bidder and just say, we need defensemen, goaltending, and depth in the top, you know, in our bottom six?
Well, they haven't done it yet. But that Pacific Division, is it just a case of things work in cycles? I think we're all surprised at how poorly Anaheim has played this season, how much difficulty they have scoring. Bruce Boudreau's always been a pretty offensive-minded head coach. But I think recently, Jeff, they've figured out that, yeah, no, this is just going to be a year where they can't score. So they're going to try and win games 1-0, which they did twice in Alberta over the last week and almost did in Vancouver on Friday night. And maybe if they make the playoffs, it's actually a sustainable way to win.
Yeah, their goal scoring, you're right, is alarming. They've scored way less than everyone else, almost 20 goals less than almost the average team in their division. That division's terrible. But if you look at their goals against, it's pretty good. I think it's the third best in the Western Conference. And yeah, you can win 1-0 against those terrible Pacific teams in Alberta. But when you got to play the Central, and you're probably going to have to at some point, that's not a sustainable way to win.
But you don't have to play the Central for two rounds of the playoffs, right? So if the Anaheim Ducks...
Well, they got to get in the playoffs.
Yeah, but, you know, they're, what, 2 points out of a playoff spot right now because they're in the worst division in hockey. And when you do make the playoffs, you are playing 2-1, 3-2, 1-0 games. And that's an experienced team that's...
Don't we still believe that they can figure out the scoring thing?
I don't see why not. I mean, they're not as deep as they were. But, you know, the fact that... Like we said, Ryan Getzlaf has 3 goals this year. He should have more than that. And he could have a great second half and be on 30-goal pace again. And Corey Perry could be on 45-goal pace again. And all of a sudden, they could start scoring 2 or 3 goals a game. And with the way that they keep the goals against down, there's no reason to believe that they can't be much better, much, much better.
Who do you think is second on their team in goals? Who would you guess?
Second on the Ducks and goals, I wouldn't even hazard a guess.
Ricard Raquel.
Sure, why not?
7.
Yikes.
Sean Horkoff is 3rd.
How much do you think they miss, like, Kyle Palmieri and stuff this year, right?
They don't have depth anymore.
Yeah. They don't come at you in waves like they used to.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Ben Ennis, John Grigg, Jeff Simmons, Sportsnet Radio Network. Let's go to the Eastern Conference. Montreal Canadiens got off to that torrid start, and we talked about them not being a team of just Carey Price and a bunch of other guys, because the advanced numbers were very much in favor of the Montreal Canadiens. Now they go through a run without Carey Price, and the other stuff falls apart. Now, they won the Winter Classic for the Boston Bruins. Brendan Gallagher, I mean, is the MVP or something? He really did seem to add a lot to that team. I mean, he scored and had a great assist. It's just one game. But
well, he's a spark.
He is
for sure. I mean, he's.
They don't have a lot of scoring outside of him, seemingly.
No, and like Pacioretty started the season off on fire, and he's come back to earth. I mean, that's a team that's built around its goaltender first, and it doesn't have its goaltender right now. And I mean, even last year, everybody was saying the numbers are unsustainable, and you know, it seems to have come back to earth a little bit this second half of this first half. They're very lucky that they got out to a huge run and gave themselves that breathing room. But I mean, are they even the division leaders today, or is that?
Yes, they are.
Yes, by a point, right?
Panthers have 3 games in hand or one game back.
The Florida Panthers.
Are they for real?
I'll bet you could argue that they're a deeper team than the Montreal Canadiens. They got a lot of young talent. And
they have a goaltender.
Well, I mean, but the Canadiens do have a goaltender.
Yeah.
They just don't at the very moment. But
sure,
there's no arguing that they have, like, the best goaltender. You know, Aaron Ekblad, if he wasn't playing in Florida, I mean, I know he's a Calder Trophy winner and all that stuff, but he is awesome. Like, he is an outstanding defenseman. And for one that's that young, or who's that young, I mean, it really is incredible. And any team that's got Jaromir Jagr for me is worth watching at any time. I love that guy.
With the mullet and missing teeth.
Yep.
You didn't even mention Barkov.
He's their leading scorer, Jagr.
It's amazing what he's doing at his age. And I mean, he's not the same player he was 15, 20 years ago, obviously, but I mean, he just finds ways to score. And he's, you know, he's a good leader. Like, he's fun to be around. Like, the guys like him. And that shows on the ice as well.
They have a lot of talent on that team.
Yeah, well, they've been crap for a long time. So they've been drafting high, right? So you better have a lot of talent.
It's the John Grigg model.
Yeah.
Get superstars in the draft.
Yeah, maybe the Maple Leafs are looking at them and what could be in the next couple of years. Should we be talking more about the Washington Capitals and their historic pace to the season? 28-7-2, and Alex Ovechkin still getting it done offensively with the goal scoring. Or is it a situation where, you know what, not unlike the Raptors, hey, talk to me when we get to playoff time and they can win a series and they can make an NHL Stanley Cup final.
I think they're the favorites to make the Stanley Cup final out of the East right now, and not only because they're 28-7-2, but because they've got arguably the greatest goal scorer, maybe not ever, but like right there.
Right, considering the era in which he plays.
Oh, I mean, he's like a top five or top six guy in goals per game, and he plays in this era. Like,
yeah.
You know, he's not playing in the 80s, right, when teams scored 400 times a year. But that's that is a deep team that's really well coached, has excellent goaltending, good defense, and top-notch offensive players. I mean, it's got everything that you need to be successful in this league. And they're proving it, obviously. I mean, like you said, they're 28-7-2.
Anybody want to take a shot at the Pittsburgh Penguins? Because they still stink. And they changed up the mics. No more Sullivan. Or no more Johnson. They got a Sullivan.
Probably shouldn't take a shot because they have two superstars, right? So I can't really...
yeah, that's right. That's your theory out the window. Or that only applies to the NBA.
But
they have two superstars for now at some point. Like
not
this,
three?
Not three. Phil Kessel's been okay, I guess.
Marc-Andre Fleury's pretty good.
Okay, there. That's who I was leaning towards.
Okay, I thought it was Phil Kessel. All right, this is the discussion that happens seemingly every year after they have disappointing seasons, whether it's regular seasons or playoff runs. Do you break up those two guys, Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin? Is this finally, I don't know how you do that deal in the middle of the season. It's probably an off-season deal. And which one, you can't send Sidney Crosby out the door, can you, Jeff?
Well, then who?
Malkin, I guess.
This is a terribly designed team. They're incredibly top-heavy. They have no depth. And they don't seem to know what they want to be every year. One year they're getting skill. Next year they're trying to get big, strong guys. And they've left themselves with a team with no defense. Some of their best defensemen went to Washington. Their cap is way too top-heavy. And, yeah, at some point you're going to have to say, do we just ride this thing out or we try to get better? But the problem with them is they're trying to sell the team, right?
Yeah.
So how do you trade one of your marketable players away? That's kind of the secret in the NHL. Jim Rutherford's kind of got his hands tied behind his back.
I don't think Jim Rutherford would trade either of those guys anyway.
So how do you get better?
It's tough. The first thing you got to do is find some defensemen who can pass the puck, right? Because outside of Chris Letang, the problem there too, Letang and Olli Maatta, they keep getting hurt, and they're your two best defensemen. They're the only ones who can move the puck, really. And they're in and out of the lineup. So there's nobody's getting the puck to the likes of Sidney Crosby. And listen, if I'm Sidney Crosby, like, I am fed up with playing with a bunch of third liners.
Right.
You know, I mean, granted, he hasn't been as good this year, and it's his 10th year in the league, and he's played a lot of hard years, and he's had his injury troubles and all that kind of stuff. But, he's still a really good hockey player. And he's playing with, like, guys like Dupuis, right? Can somebody please score for me? If I pass you the puck, can you, or can you pass it to me? Because I've scored 50 in this league before, too.
Phil Kessel's not that guy?
Well, no, they tried him, but did anybody ever think Phil Kessel was going to be that guy?
I think a lot of people pegged him to have his first 40-goal season ever.
I think by default it was like, how can you not score 40 playing on that team on that power play, right?
We're finding out.
But, yeah, we are. I for one never thought he would work out with Sidney Crosby because Crosby is a guy who likes to drop his shoulder and go to the net and play in the hard areas of the ice, and Phil Kessel is anything but that. Phil Kessel is a perimeter wrist shooter.
Yes,
and, I didn't think he was going to fit. I did think he would be better than this, and I thought the Pittsburgh Penguins would be better than they are as well.
Tyler Bozak has outscored Phil Kessel.
Yeah, which is insane.
It's probably a deceiving number, but.
Yeah.
But Ben's right. When Kessel got traded, everyone just assumed, all right, this guy's going to light it up, playing with Crosby and Malkin.
Yeah.
He hasn't been good at all. He's on pace for...
does he have, 11 goals?
11 goals. He's on pace for less than 25 this year.
That's not great. And people thought, oh, he'll score 50. Now, first of all, he's never scored 40 in his career, right? So I think people had this different vision of Phil Kessel in their heads.
He's got 5 power play points.
Yeah, it's not very good.
5 power play points?
Yeah. With that team.
Yeah. That is bizarre. They have power play problems. When we come back, the American League East is going to be tough. It's always tough, although last year it was a little soft. But the Blue Jays are the reigning division champions. Now they got to go through an absolute murderer's row of relievers in New York with the Yankees as they acquire Aroldis Chapman, the Red Sox completely overhauling their team this offseason as well. Plus, we'll get to week 17 of the NFL, look ahead to the playoffs. That's coming up next. Ben Ennis alongside Jeff Simmons and John Gregg. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, John Gregg, and Jeff Simmons around the table. We have some news taking place. Major League Baseball, which is nice. It's kind of filtering down now. It's supposed to be the downtime in baseball's offseason. There's some big names still out there. One of them off the board now is the New York Yankees giving up the poo-poo platter for Aroldis Chapman. Four prospects, quote-unquote. There's only a couple of guys. One guy's name is Rookie Davis. Be nice when he's a grizzled vet, like in his 15th year in Major League Baseball, and his name is Rookie. But the Yankees now are going to trot out a bullpen that looks a little something like this. Dylan Betances, Andrew Miller, and then Aroldis Chapman throwing 101 the back end of that bullpen. Now, there are some issues surrounding Chapman, obviously, and it's the reason why he didn't go for much. And in fact, might miss some serious time this offseason, which we'll get into as well. But, like, on the surface, let's just talk about, Jeff, the prospect of facing a Yankees team that's not going to need much from its starters because that bullpen is crazy.
And you saw how much trouble the Blue Jays had with that Royals bullpen.
Yeah.
These guys are better.
Yes.
These guys dominated last year. These are three of the best strikeout guys in baseball, three of the best swing and miss stuff in baseball. Unless you get to the starters early, how are you going to beat these guys late in the game?
I don't know.
It's alarming how good they are.
I mean, things happen, but right, like on paper, John, like you look at it, it almost doesn't matter what order they roll them out in. That is, and again, anything can happen, and I guess injuries can take place, and guys can have down years, but it seems hard to imagine if Chapman is still throwing 101 that he's going to regress anytime soon.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the Yankees of old with Rivera and Wetland and Stanton and Jeff Nelson, and like they were playing 6-inning games, right? And they're going to be doing that again this year, and they're going to need it because, you know, their rotation is
there's some question marks.
Yeah. It's an exciting time to be a Yankees fan, I guess. I mean, we'll see if everybody else can hold up. I mean, they are an old team that suffered through a lot of injuries last season and were still able to make the playoffs. So, I mean, that's going to be key. But, yeah, it's a hell of a bullpen.
I mentioned there's other stuff surrounding Aroldis Chapman involved in a domestic violence investigation. He was cleared of all charges. So there will be no legal ramifications for Chapman. But there will probably be some sort of discipline handed down by Major League Baseball, first year of their domestic violence policy. They don't need anything to happen legally for the commissioner, Rob Manfred, to take action. He probably will. Now, Chapman's in the last year of his arbitration eligibility, but what's really interesting about this whole thing, that is, if he's suspended for, I think the number is like 43 games plus this year, he's not a free agent at the end of the 2016 season. That the Yankees have him for all of 2017 as well. I wonder.
That will happen for sure then.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you wonder what kind of conversations Brian Cashman and the Yankees have had with the league, what their thinking is. How does that affect what the Yankees gave up for Aroldis Chapman and how this all came down?
Well, you know better than me what they gave up. You know, you're the scene head here.
Right.
But it sounds to me like they gave up next to nothing.
Yeah.
Basically. And, yeah, I mean, if I was Mark Shapiro, I'd do that deal.
But can they, I mean, I guess the Blue Jays were just never going to give up prospects because they gave away so many. Even as low level as these were, Jeff, it seems like the Blue Jays, I mean, that's just not part of their MO this season.
No, and there's a lot of reasons. Club control is part of that equation for sure. He's on the last year of his deal, and I don't imagine Mark Shapiro, who's insisted that he wants to rebuild the farm system after those deals, is going to give up four guys for a guy with 1 year of club control. It just doesn't seem up their alley right now. They're trying to do two things at once, it seems like. They're trying to build up the farm system and win now. Chapman solves one of those, but takes away. So if I'm a Blue Jays fan, yeah, I want that deal because you're in a unique year where you got Encarnacion and Batista in the last year of their contracts, way under market value. If you can get a guy like this and maybe even get him for next year.
It seems like a deal you have to make. But should there be some sect of the Yankee fan base upset at this because of the stuff that surrounds him? And yeah, there are no, he's not going to jail. There's not going to be any legal ramifications for what he did. But you read the report. I mean, it's pretty harrowing stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly. I don't know. I mean, it's the Yankees' job to win baseball games. And when they don't, people get fired. And this is sports. And
I'm able to separate my morality from my love of sport and my understanding of teams wanting to win. Like, I think you really get into a danger zone if you start looking at baseball players, any athlete, as more than just numbers on a page and what they can do on the field, because at that point, it's really tough to like anybody when it comes to sports. There's a lot of guys that you wouldn't root for if you really knew too much about them.
Well, there's a lot of guys across, yeah. Exactly. And Aroldis Chapman, by all accounts, doesn't seem to be the best dude. Now, I don't know enough about his history prior to this to comment on his character
Dusty Baker seemed to love him. It was some real tone-deaf comments. But, yeah, it seems like a quiet guy.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm in a Major League Baseball GM and if I don't think he's going to ruin clubhouse chemistry, I want that guy on my team, especially when there haven't been any charges laid and he was, you know, by the letter of the law, didn't do anything wrong. He very well might have.
Very easily.
It seems like, to my non-legal mind, he did. The Toronto Blue Jays need somebody to save games.
Yeah.
They need a bullpen, and they don't have any. And as a Blue Jays fan, it's kind of disappointing that weren't in on this. But maybe they were, although maybe they weren't.
Depends on what you believe, but so much of what the Blue Jays did right in 2015 was because of the clubhouse chemistry was so great. I would argue that it had a lot to do with the fact that they had the MVP and a bunch of mashers, and they get, you know, David Price for the second half of the season. But I guarantee you the Blue Jays now believe that chemistry plays a lot into what they're doing, and it probably was the reason why they weren't that aggressive in going after Jonathan Papelbon. I wonder if that is tied into the reason why they didn't make a play for Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah, that has to be. And a lot of these guys who run the front office, you hear about Mark Shapiro and Atkins a lot, but a lot of these guys are Anthopoulos' old assistants.
Yeah.
And they kind of learn from their past mistakes that it's not all about bringing in these high-talented guys that may look good in some of the advanced numbers. They have admitted they struck out a lot because they overvalued club chemistry, and that's kind of the reason they targeted Martin. So, yeah, that would make a lot of sense if that's part of the problem. Maybe they're like, it's not worth it, even at the cheap price.
Always feels good to talk about baseball, especially when there is snow on the ground. Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, John Gregg, and Jeff Simmons. So it's week 17 in the NFL. Not a ton on the line, which is kind of surprising. I mean, nothing as far as playoff spots in the NFC. There is one in the AFC that could be interesting. And in fact, Jeff, I'm kind of surprised that NBC didn't flex the Jets and Bills to that Sunday night game. Instead, they're going with the division on the line, Vikings and Packers, which you could argue you're probably better served to lose that game, are you not?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Long term, the winner of that game probably is getting Seattle in the first round. The loser has to go to Washington. I would much rather go to Washington than host that playoff game.
Yeah.
But I guess the teams, they make money by hosting a playoff game. Mm-hmm. You get that division title banner. And I think for a team like Minnesota, winning a division and beating Green Bay, that does mean a lot.
You don't want to be swept by the Packers.
Yeah, and that's the
They look so bad in their first matchup, too.
Yeah, and that's the team you've been going against for so long, and there is some sort of mental edge to actually winning that division. But, yeah, this week 17 is always kind of a weird one. You got teams packing it, and you got teams sitting guys for the playoffs. So that Jets-Bills game is actually pretty interesting because you got the Rex Ryan-Jets thing. They can knock the Jets out of the playoffs, or the Jets can win.
He celebrated like he won the Super Bowl in the Thursday night matchup.
And they still are going 500.
Yeah, that's not great. I forgot to mention, the Colts are still, that 10-game parlay is still alive. The first part is complete, so it's only a 9-gamer now. So the Indy Colts are technically still alive for a playoff spot in the AFC.
Have you seen what they're doing this week? All their quarterbacks are injured.
Yeah.
Luck. Hasselbeck's injured. Their third string was put on IR. They signed two guys off the street, Josh Freeman and Ryan Lindley. He played in the playoffs last
year. Yeah.
They don't know who their starting quarterback is yet.
Why not?
They got three guys off the street.
They got to go Wildcat.
Yeah.
It's like a preseason game. They might give a guy in every quarter.
That's insane.
Yeah. And this team might make the playoffs.
Well, I mean, they might.
But they're not going to.
They're not going
to. Like, they're going to lose this game.
It's been a weird year in the NFL.
Yeah, it has. As far as, well, I mean, let's continue that thought, because the AFC, as far as the quarterbacks, total mishmash. And I'm talking about teams that are in the playoffs. Outside of Tom Brady, you're looking at Brock Osweiler, hopefully A.J. McCarron, but maybe not even A.J. McCarron. You're looking at Brandon Whedon, Alex Smith, Ryan Fitzpatrick. Now, maybe Ben Roethlisberger throws his name in there. And I guess, Jeff, if Ben Roethlisberger does get in, does that not make them the favorite outside of the Patriots to advance to the Super Bowl? It seems like it might.
Yeah, I thought the Steelers had as good a shot as anyone to win that conference. And then they go and lose to Ryan Mallett in a must-win game. He was signed off the street. It's been such a strange year. The Cincinnati Bengals were the team that I thought could really push New England in the AFC. They lose their quarterback. A.J. McCarron gets hurt in a fluke fumble last week. Guy lands on his wrist. Denver's got a guy who's never played a playoff game before. Peyton Manning's now the backup. So yeah, I don't know. As flawed as New England is, they're injured. They haven't been great in offense. I don't see who beats them. It might be the Jets.
Well, should we not be giving more credit to what the Chiefs have done? Because they lost five straight in the middle of the season, won 9 straight after that. They're blowing teams out.
You know who the Chiefs remind me of?
Who?
The Raptors.
Okay. So John hates them?
He probably does. They both wear red, but they're that team that they're good. They're getting the most of what they have, but can you really see Alex Smith winning in the...
No, I can't, but I mean...
Alex Smith is DeMar DeRozan.
I'd like to think DeMar DeRozan's better than Alex Smith.
I agree. I think he is.
Although Alex Smith, first overall pick, right? He's finding his wide receivers, though, on occasion now, right? Like, that's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, they actually have, like, a very well-balanced team. They're moving the ball. They can run the ball. Jamal Charles is hurt. Hasn't slowed them down at all. Their defense is really good. But I don't know if Alex Smith can go into New England and beat the Patriots.
In the NFC, I'm surprised. You know what? Usually when the last undefeated team goes down, we see Mercury Morris and the rest of that 72 Dolphins team raise a glass. I haven't heard from them or seen them yet.
Well, there's a weird tie here.
What?
Don Shula, who's coach was the coach of that 72, is the kind of, the other than Mercury Morris, the face of that weird champagne popping thing. His son is the offensive coordinator of the Panthers.
There you go.
So he's got kind of a weird balance of what he's trying to
do. So you're saying they threw that game against the Falcons?
Yeah, maybe. Father-son thing.
But did anybody ever really think that Carolina was going to go undefeated?
Like, sure, why not? Oh, certainly the way the schedule is breaking down.
Yeah.
The Falcons stink.
I was more surprised they lost to the Falcons that they didn't go undefeated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and it raises the question, is that not the better scenario for that team, to not have the specter of going undefeated through the regular season?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you don't need that kind of extra pressure hanging over your head.
So what kind of pressure is on that team? Because it's going to be a team with high expectations, but I mean, if they don't win this week, they might not even be the one seed in the NFC. And I think you talk to a lot of people, they look at the Cardinals as being the more complete team and the team more equipped to win a Super Bowl than the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the Cardinals can win in more ways than the Panthers can. They have such a good passing offense, and now all of a sudden they have a great running game. David Johnson was their third string running back. He comes off the bench because of injury. He's been lighting the NFL up. Some people think he's the number one fantasy pick for next year. And the Cardinals have a great defense, just like the Panthers do. And they can run the ball and throw it. I think they're a much tougher team to play against than the Panthers are.
Is anybody buying on the Packers? They've looked, I mean, save for that Hail Mary win over the Lions, we could be really talking about a different looking season for them. I know they have Aaron Rodgers, but Aaron Rodgers hasn't been Aaron Rodgers because he has nobody to throw the ball to, and he spends a lot of the game on his back.
Yeah, they've been a bit of a schizophrenic team this year, right? Like up and down, and
yeah.
They beat the
Seahawks early this season, but the Seahawks weren't the Seahawks.
Everybody's
then.
Beating the Seahawks then, right? But
yeah.
They don't inspire a lot of faith, and that's kind of where I am on the Pats too, right? Like the
yeah,
like I do have faith in Tom Brady, I guess, and Bill Belichick, but you got to have guys to throw to, and there isn't, you know?
Plus, Bill Belichick seems like a liar because he said he used to play hockey, and I don't know if you saw him on the ice before that Winter Classic. It looked like he had never laced up skates before in his entire life, but I guess we're supposed to take him at his word, right? Because he said he used to play hockey because he said the balls were not deflated.
The Pats were doing some great stuff with their Instagram account, eh? And their Twitter account with all the Photoshop work they were doing. It was pretty good.
Well, the New England Patriots aren't going to have to beat too many great quarterbacks unless Peyton Manning returns for the Denver Broncos, but he will be on the sidelines at least for another week. Thanks, gents. That'll do it for another edition of Sportsnet Magazine Live. For John Gregg and Jeff Simmons, I'm Ben Ennis. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.